Rock.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today's narration is the 16th one from Geoffrey of Monmouth's The History of the Kings of Britain. And we are now entering into the Saxon domination. As soon as Constantine had been crowned, the Saxons and the two sons of Mordred promptly rose against him. They failed in their attempt to overthrow him, and after a long series of battles, they fled. One of them made his way into London, and the other to Winchester, and they took command of those two cities. It was at this time that the saintly Daniel died, the most devout bishop of the Church of Bangor. The Bishop of Gloucester was promoted to be Archbishop of London. It was then, too, that David, the most holy Archbishop of the City of the Legions, died in the town of Menevia, inside his own abbey, which he loved more than all the other monasteries of his diocese, for St. Patrick, who prophesied David's own birth, had founded it. He was seized by some sudden illness and died while on a visit to his friars there. He was buried in that same church, on the order of Mabgo, king of the Venedotians. Kinnoch, the priest of the church of Llanbadarn, was promoted to this higher rank and replaced him in the metropolitan see. Constantine continued to harass the sons of Mordred. First, he forced the Saxons to submit to his authority, and then he captured the two cities which I just mentioned. He killed one of the young men in front of the altar in the church of St. Amphibolus, where he was taking refuge. The second hid himself in the monastery of certain friars in London. Constantine discovered him and slew him without mercy beside the altar there. 4 years later, he was himself struck down by the vengeance of God. They buried him by the side of Uther Pendragon, within the circle of stones called Stonehenge in the English language, which had been built with such wonderful skill not far from Salisbury. Constantine's nephew succeeded him, a young man of extraordinary bravery called Aurelius Conanus. He ruled over the whole island, and would indeed have been worthy of such a crown if he had not taken such delight in civil war. He gained the kingship only by attacking his own uncle, who ought to have reigned after Constantine, throwing him into prison and killing his two sons. Aurelius Conanus died in the third year of his reign. Vortiporius came after Conanus. The Saxons rose against him and brought over their fellow countrymen from Germany in a huge fleet. Vortiporius fought a battle against them, beat them, and so gained control of the entire kingdom. After this, he governed the people frugally and peacefully. Malgo came next. He was the most handsome of almost all the leaders of Britain, and he strove hard to do away with those who ruled the people harshly. He was a man brave in battle, more generous than his predecessors, and greatly renowned for his courage. Unfortunately, he made himself hateful to God, for he was given to the vice of homosexuality. He became ruler of the entire island, and then, in a series of bloodthirsty wars, he subjected to his authority the 6 neighbouring islands of the ocean, that is, Ireland, Iceland, Gotland, the Orkneys, Norway, and Denmark. After Malgo came Ceredic, a fomenter of civil discords, hateful to God, and to the Britons also. When the Saxons came to understand his fickleness, they'd sent to Ireland for Gormund, the king of the Africans, who had gone there with an enormous fleet and conquered the people of that country. As a result of this treachery by the Saxons, Gormund, accompanied by 160,000 Africans, came over to Britain, which, between them, the Saxons, and the local inhabitants, were completely devastating, the former by breaking their oath of fealty, the latter by continually waging civil wars among themselves. Gormund made a treaty with the Saxons and then attacked King Ceredic. After a long series of battles, he drove the king from city to city and then forced him to take refuge in Cirencester, where he besieged him. Isambard, the nephew of Louis, king of the Franks, went to join him there and made a treaty of friendship with him. The terms of the treaty were that as a token of his friendship for Gormund, Isambard should renounce his Christian faith. This, on the understanding that with the latter's help, he could wrest the kingdom of Gaul from his uncle, by whom, so he alleged, he had been forcibly and unjustly expelled. The city, I have mentioned, was captured and burnt. Gormund then fought Ceredic and chased him over the Severn into Wales. Next, he ravaged the fields, set fire to all the neighbouring cities, and gave free vent to his fury until he had burned almost all the land in the island from one sea to another. All the settlements were smashed to the ground with a great force of battering rams. All the inhabitants were destroyed by flashing swords and crackling flames, and the priests of their church along with them. Those left alive fled, shattered by these dreadful disasters, but wherever they went, no havens of safety remained open to them in their flight. You foolish people, weighed down by the sheer burden of your own monstrous crimes, never happy that when you are fighting one another, why have you so far weakened yourselves in domestic upsets that you, who need to submit far distant kingdoms to your own authority, are now like some fruitful vineyard which has gone sour, and you cannot protect your own country, wives and children from your enemies. Keep on with your civil squabbling and forget what the gospel says. Every kingdom divided against itself shall be brought to desolation, and a house divided against itself shall fall. Because your kingdom was divided against itself, because the lunacy of civil war and the smoke cloud of jealousy obscured your mind, because your pride did not permit you to obey a single king. That is why you see your fatherland ravaged by the most impious heathens and your homesteads overturned one upon the other. All of which things those who come after you will lament in the future. They will see the cubs of the wild lioness occupy their castles, cities and other possessions. In their misery they will be driven forth from all of these, and only with the greatest difficulty will they ever recover the glory of their former estate, that is, if they ever recover it at all. Once this inhuman tyrant Gormund, with his countless thousands of Africans, had destroyed almost all the island, as I have described it already, he handed over a considerable part of it called Logria to the Saxons, whose treason had been the cause of his landing. Such Britons as remained sought refuge in the western parts of the kingdom, that is in Cornwall and Wales. From there they continued to make fierce attacks upon their enemies. When the two archbishops, Theonas of London and Tadiochius of York, saw that all the churches under their jurisdiction were razed to the ground, they fled with such priests as remained alive after such a calamity to the shelter of the forests of Wales. They took with them the relics of their saints, for they were afraid that all these holy bones of the men of ancient times would be destroyed by the barbarian invasion if they allowed themselves to be martyred where they stood, and so abandoned the bones to the fate which threatened them. Many priests fled in a great fleet to Armorican Brittany, with the result that the whole church of the two provinces of Logria and Northumbria lost its monasteries. I shall describe these happenings elsewhere when I come to translate their Book of Exile. For many years after this, the Britons were deprived of the right to govern their own kingdom and were without sovereign power over their own island. They made no attempt to recover their former greatness. On the contrary, they continued to ravage with civil war the part of their fatherland which still remained theirs, this part being ruled by the three tyrants instead of by a single king. In the same way, the Saxons too did not establish a single kingship in the island. They also owed allegiance to three kings and divided their energy between attacking their own side and assaulting the Britons. It was at this time that Augustine was sent to Britain by Pope Gregory of blessed memory. This Augustine was to preach the word of God to the Angles, who, blinded by their pagan superstition, had done away with Christianity entirely in the part of the island which they controlled. Christianity still flourished in the part belonging to the Britons. It had been accepted from the time of Pope Eleutherius and had never lost its influence among them. When Augustine arrived, he found 7 bishoprics and an archbishopric in the Britons' territory, all of them occupied by most devout prelates. There were also 7 abbeys, and in them God's flock observed a seemly rule. Among the rest, there was in the city of Bangor an abbey so noble, and the number of monks in it was so great, that when the monastic body was divided into 7 sections, each with its prior duly appointed, none of the sections had less than 300 monks, all of them living by the labour of their hands. Their abbot was called Dinut, and he was a man remarkably learned in the liberal arts. When Augustine asked the bishops of the Britons to submit to his orders and to share in common with him the task of preaching the gospel to the Angles, it was Dinut who proved to him, on a whole series of grounds, that they owed him no allegiance at all, and that they would not dream of wasting their preaching on their enemies. They had their own archbishop, and what is more, these Saxons were the very people who persisted in depriving them of their own fatherland. That was why they hated the Saxons so. They had no interest whatsoever in the Saxons' faith or their religion, and they had about as much in common with the Angles as they had with dogs. When Ethelbert, the king of the men of Kent, saw that the Britons were refusing to accept the authority of Augustine and were scorning his preaching, he bore it very ill. He stirred up Ethelfrid, king of the Northumbrians, and a number of other petty kings of the Saxons. A huge army was assembled and ordered to march to the city of Bangor and destroy Abbot Dinut and the other churchmen who had scorned Augustine. They accepted Ethelbert's orders, collected an enormous army together, and set out for the land of the Britons.